getting ready for liftoff, Maine as a potential spaceport. When you think of satellite launches and rocket technology, you probably think Cape Canaveral, NASA, maybe Elon Musk. But according to some, Maine is uniquely situated to be the home to a space launch and educational center. There are currently 10 spaceports in the U.S., but they primarily serve to launch large satellites. The proposal for a Maine spaceport revolves around launching nanosatellites. These very small devices require smaller rockets to get into orbit and open up new possibilities for industry and education. I'm Erwin Gratz. Today we'll learn more about Maine's potential as a spaceport, and we'll also talk about other news from out of this world, including the Chinese landing a rover on the far side of the moon. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Erwin Gratz, and this is Maine Calling. Well, it may not be very well known, but a number of Maine-based businesses are focusing on the future of space exploration. Today, we're going to learn more about their work, and we'll also talk about the latest news from the world of astronomy. Joining me in the studio, Sasha Derry. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Blue Shift Aerospace. Terry Shahada is Executive Director of the Maine Space Grant Consortium and Senior Policy Associate for Research and Economic Development and Coordinator of the Maine Economic Improvement Fund. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Dr. Ali Abedi. He is Assistant Vice President for Research and Director of University of Maine Center for Undergraduate Research, where he's a professor of electrical and computer engineering. Now, earlier this week, the firm Blue Origin launched its new Shepard rocket to the edge of outer space, some 66 miles up. The capsule, designed eventually to carry people, this time was carrying some NASA experiments. It was the latest example of the budding private space business. Now, you may be surprised to learn just how extensive that space business is growing here in Maine. And in fact, the Maine Technology Institute and the Maine Space Grant Consortium have contributed $130,000 toward a feasibility study on the idea of creating a launch site in the state. Now, we'll talk more about that in just a bit. But first, if you want to go to outer space, you need rocket fuel. That leads us to our first guest, Sasha Derry of Blue Shift Aerospace. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, tell us, what are you working on in terms of rocket fuel?
Sure. Well, Blue Shift is developing a new type of hybrid rocket. It's a combination of liquid fuel rockets with solid fuel rockets, and we're using a bio-derived fuel. To the best of our knowledge, we're the only company in the world that's developing such a rocket. And not only is it carbon neutral and a bio-derived fuel, but it performs better than similar what are called hybrid rockets, and I'm happy to go into that later on if you want.
All right. Well, maybe we will do that. And I should point out, he actually brought a sample with him to the station today. Not that we're launching anything from here today, but if you'd like a chance to see this, or at least the solid fuel component of it.
That's right.
We'll have a picture up on our Facebook page. Terry Shahada, talk a little bit about this feasibility study for a spaceport. Where did this come from?
It's probably 20 years in the making. As the executive director of the Space Grant Consortium, which is solely funded by NASA to support the research infrastructure in the state, throughout, say, the past 20 years, there's been a gradual increase in capacity in Maine around aerospace, whether it's around Maine Aerospace Alliance, that's managed by the Manufacturing Association of Maine, all the great stuff in engineering and technology at the University of Maine that Dr. Abedi can talk to, and companies like Blue Shift and Vault Enterprise. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on. And on top of that, we have a lot of the concerns that we have about the workforce development, students leaving high school, after high school, going out of state and not getting enough workforce, and the concern about STEM education in general. In the last couple of years, what we decided to do is to see if we can create a vision that people can unify around. There's a lot of great stuff that's going on in different organizations, but nothing is unifying it. So we thought that if we can use space, and everybody likes space, and see if we can get this grand vision, just like President Kennedy did in the early 60s when he unified the country to create this massive infrastructure for space exploration. Why can't we do something like that? Let's explore it. Let's see what can happen by not only having a series of mission complex, and say in Brunswick Landing, that has K-12 research and development commercialization, and a launch site, something a little bit more remote, be it Washington County or Aroostook County, and see what happens. It's an opportunity to kind of rise, the tide would rise all boat. And I think that would attract a lot of businesses to come to Maine, a lot of young families to come to Maine to create businesses. Students would be able to create their own jobs as well. It would create those kind of opportunities so we can attract people from the outside and retain our students. And also, by the way, all the technologies that will be developed as a result of the spaceport are applicable to help our natural resource industry, be it agriculture, marine, forestry, even biotechnology as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a wild idea. It's certainly people can say it's cool, but I think it really is an opportunity to create this vision that I think everyone would embrace and see whether or not we can make a difference here in the state.
So how far along is this feasibility study?
Actually, it just got started. As you mentioned in your opening statement, we were awarded a grant by MTI. I think MTI, being an innovative organization, felt that this is crazy enough to invest in, and we certainly invested our own money. And NASA was really interested in that. So we just hired a consultant that would work with the steering committee, in which Sasha is on, Ali is on, and other people are on, people from the Brunswick Landing and the private sector as well as higher education. And what we hope to do by sometime in March is to have a good idea and understanding whether or not there's a market out there. We don't want to build it, and they will come. We want to make sure that we have real strong tenants, real strong users of the facility, not here necessarily in Maine, but outside. Mm-hmm. That's really where, in order to sustain the growth this kind of a complex, you'd have to get, companies, the Google-like companies, the Microsoft-like companies, even smaller companies that would want to be tenants and support research and development and commercialization, and also see whether or not rocket launchers from outside of the state would like to use the facility. So hopefully by March we'll have a better idea.
Sasha, I want to ask you, obviously you're on the business side of this, and I was reading that we now have approximately 10 potential launch sites for rockets of various size around the country, spaceports, if you will. How much demand is there for rocket launches, for satellites, et cetera?
Sure. We're actually in a really interesting point in the marketplace where things are about to swing up. The big market that we're going after at Blue Shift is to launch these tiny satellites called CubeSats, which are as small as 10 centimeters cubed. And they do everything from Earth observation, imaging, to communications. And the market for these is expected to blossom from several hundred million a year to up to $62 billion by 2030. And we're hoping to capture just a percentage of that here in Maine. And what's really neat about Maine, and when we initially came to Maine, we weren't thinking of doing this. But what's really interesting about the concept of launching from Maine is the ability to achieve what are called polar orbits, where you're essentially shooting the rocket in towards a pole, and you're looping around the Earth as the Earth rotates below, and allows these small satellites to do imaging or provide communications across the entire surface of the Earth. And Maine is uniquely positioned where you can launch off the southern coast, and you're unencumbered by anything but ocean for thousands of miles.
Right.
And it's hard to find a place like that elsewhere in the United States. So Maine is particularly well-suited for that type of launch.
Yeah, I mean, the only other place that I'm aware of right now does polar launches is Vandenberg out in California. Dr. Abetting, I want to bring you in on this, too. I mean, at this point, talk a little bit about some of the work that's being done, some of the research, and how much it's generating any additional demand for satellites or satellite sensing?
We have been very fortunate to have Maine Space Grant Consortium here in the state of Maine. In the past decade, they basically have been instrumental helping us secure funding from NASA, from various NASA centers all over the country. And in the focus we have at the University of Maine College of Engineering, among many different departments there, is trying to make a space technology a reality. So there are lots of challenges that exist today that was mentioned in terms of like the cost, reliability, safety, and all that. And we have been very lucky to be able to work with NASA on the first model of inflatable lunar habitat up at the University of Maine at the Wireless Sensor Network Laboratory. So it's a collaboration between electrical engineering, computer engineering, mechanical engineering, and civil engineering departments. And our kind of contribution to inflatable space habitat is focused on developing wireless sensors and instrumentation. So how does that help with answering all these challenges that I kind of laid out? Is first of all, there will be a ton of weight associated with using cables for current technology that uses wired sensors that will be eliminated by using wireless technology. And also we can create more secure and reliable habitat for people who go to space. And all of these will translate into lower cost systems, which basically dovetail very nicely with the spaceport vision of sending a smaller size satellites to the space. So mainly our focus has been on that front. So we have been working on this laboratory for instrumentation. We have been developing products such as wireless sensors for detecting leaks on a space station that we flew to a space in 2016, was operational there for a few months, and now we have the devices back here on Earth and several other kind of technologies related to that. But mainly our focus is how to make access to space affordable, not only just for the engineers and scientists, but for the general public, for K-12 students, for high school, middle school kids, and also any other scientists around the world who want to have access to space without having to spend billions of dollars for large satellite submissions up there.
And Terry Shada, that is kind of the big thing that's changing kind of in the last decade, is suddenly the cost of getting instrumentation into space is actually becoming fairly affordable.
It is, and that's where I think where Maine comes in. I think right now most of the nanosatellites that Sasha's talked about, which is the focus of the Maine spaceport, are used as secondary payloads on large rockets. Those are they're not the primary, and sometimes you wait 2 to 3 years to launch a rocket. So if we have our own infrastructure, we can become basically, we can attract customers that want to launch with rockets like Sasha has with Vault and others. It could be basic on demand. And then, I may be talking out of terms, but you're not going to wait 2-3 years. It'll be more dedicated to nanosatellites. And I think also it's important to mention that the use of those nanosatellites with all the instrumentation, once, as Sasha said, the fact Maine is geographically located, that the market is looking for polar orbits. If you compare that to equatorial launches, you've got sea to sea on both ends, the ocean, the Atlantic, and the Pacific. By a polar orbit, all you see on landmass is North America and South America. So that gives you more opportunity to do remote sensing, evaluation, marine coastline, and things of that nature. So those really push the technology in order to use the satellites and launch it for that use. Also for our K-12. I mean, if imagine, for example, if we're able to launch clusters of nanosatellites, those satellites could be used 24/7, dedicated to high schools and elementary school to use to do research and development, to work with high schools and businesses to launch and collect the data for training and STEM education.
And that's part of what's amazing about the CubeSats is that they're so inexpensive to build. High school and even I've heard of elementary schools are able to build the CubeSats for under $20,000.
Sometimes even $500,000. So the construction and the manufacturing of the CubeSats, they're not very expensive. But we have companies in Maine that can certainly are willing to donate, but also the launch. You're talking about the fraction of the launch that would be required. And what really intrigues me too, and I'll just make this one statement, is that you have businesses and biotechnology businesses here, for example, and we can attract more from the outside, that they may want to utilize zero gravity to test the purity of manufacturing of drugs, okay? They could do that, and then they could do the testing evaluation, bring it back, the CubeSat, which has never been done before, but why not push the technology to bring it back, collect a sample, do more testing, and then actually do manufacturing in space, extremely high pure pharmaceuticals. So is that pie in the sky? Possibly, but you never can advance unless you actually try.
I have one more question for you, Sasha, before we go to our break. But I do want to remind folks, too, that we're always interested in hearing from you if you'd like to be in touch with us. Here's our phone number, by the way, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Sasha, tell us a little bit about the kinds of rockets your company, your fuel, is going to launch.
Sure. We're actually, the first round of rockets that we're looking to produce is a suborbital rocket, meaning it will go to space. And in this case, it'll go to space, touch it, come back down. So it'd be perfect for the type of experiments that Terry's talking about, where somebody wants to do an experiment, get into space momentarily, bring it back down and see what happened. We're calling it currently the Brown Dwarf 10. It'll only be about 15 to 17 feet long and carry about a payload of about 10 kilograms. The larger rocket, which would carry CubeSats to low Earth orbit, would carry about 50 kilograms worth of these satellites to low Earth orbit, and that would be about as long as a tractor-trailer truck, about 50, 52 feet, the trailer part of that, and would be about three stages, about 4 feet wide approximately. So it's a much smaller rocket than what we're used to in the media with SpaceX and ULA and others. And I think that's something really interesting, too, is with these smaller rockets, you can also lower the launch logistics costs. Wow. The effects on the environment are far lower. The noise is far lower. Everything is scaled way down. Yeah. And it's much more Maine-like.
Mm. Any parts of this meant to be reusable?
Not currently. Yeah. We're looking to use as much as possible materials which are biodegradable or biosourced.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got more to talk about. Perhaps we'll take some of your comments and questions as well. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Northeast Imports, in South Portland, specializing in the sale and service of pre-owned Subarus. NortheastImportsLLC.com. And the Portland Food Co-op, a community-owned market featuring a wide selection of local and organic products. Open to everyone 7 days a week.
In the late 90s, a group of musicians got together to try to answer a question.
What could happen when strangers meet?
The unexpected creativity that can come from working or playing or falling in love with someone very different from yourself. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hidden Brain is Sunday morning at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. With the Mr. Rogers documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor coming to Maine Public Television on February 9th, Maine Public is looking for a few stories about heroes in your neighborhood. Do you have a story about one such individual that you would like to share? We'll post them up on our website and our Facebook page and mention a few of the submissions on a special Maine Calling on February 8th, dedicated to exploring the power of goodness. Send us your story to myneighbor@mainepublic.org. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz. Today on the program, Maine's potential as a spaceport. Joining me today, Ali Abedi, Director of UMaine Center for Undergraduate Research and Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering. Sasha Derry is Chief Executive Officer of Blue Shift Aerospace. And Terry Shahada is Executive Director of the Maine Space Grant Consortium and Senior Policy Associate with the Maine Economic Improvement Fund. We invite you to join our conversation. You can do that by calling 1-800-399-3566. send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And on the line with us now is Dr. Ryan Dorlan. He's an assistant professor of physics and chemistry at St. Joseph's College. Dr. Dorlan, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you, Erwin. I'm a big fan of the show and also of the work your panelists are doing to promote the space industry in Maine.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about, you've received a grant from NASA and the Maine Space Grant Consortium. What is that for?
Well, my project is to bring the world of these small nanosatellites into the classroom. Through this project, the students learn about the science behind these satellites in class. And then they work on designing missions and building mock-ups of the satellites in their lab sections.
Okay. What are some of the possible outcomes of that work?
Well, ideally, some of these student projects may be included in the future launches. But more importantly, we're also interested in getting these students interested in this subject, interested in space exploration in satellites, and in STEM careers, and I hope they consider Maine a place to work.
Are there particular areas that they are exploring with their satellites, things they're researching?
Well, with the projects that they're working on, many of the students are interested in including environmental monitoring sensors to look at how things are changing in Maine, to look at forest cover and changes in the Gulf of Maine.
Hmm. When you talk about taking a look at the forest cover, so are we talking about something as simple as sending photographic equipment up on a CubeSat to take a look at what the forest canopy looks like here?
Well, exactly. These small satellites are able to supplement what's already been done with the larger satellites. But again, the price point on these satellites is so much lower that this brings it within the realm of designing specific missions and allowing students to have more hands-on access to this equipment.
What kind of skills does this teach the students? And perhaps are there ways in which those skills are applicable in other areas?
Well, through this project, the students learn, first of all, about the general science, but then also a lot of engineering and programming related skills. So really skills that become valuable in the workforce later on. And through this project, I really want to get students interested in this early on in college so that they could consider going into a career in this later and maybe being transferred off to OLLI or to a program at UMaine to get more of the background in engineering that they would need to be very effective in this workforce.
Talk to us a little bit about how the students react to some of this work, do you think? I mean, is space still cool for young people?
Well, until recently, many of them didn't realize the capacity that Maine has for these launches, especially these polar launches. And then also, again, being able to work with a small satellite, it's something very tangible that the students can touch, can work with, can design. Usually they just see these things on television or at larger universities. Now we can bring it into every college and every K-12 classroom throughout the state.
Hmm. Where can people go to learn more about the progress that you're making with this?
Well, we're working to set up a website right now, but for now I would recommend people go to the Maine Space Grant Consortium website, msgc.org.
All right. Fair enough. What else can you tell us about this work that you're up to these days?
Well, we've had about 30 students go through this class last year, and then I have about 25 going through this year that will be working on these satellites. And out of this, they are really interested in this industry, and I really encourage them to consider internships or careers in the space industry, especially in Maine.
At this point, do you have launch vehicles for the satellites the students have worked on?
No, we don't. We just have prototype designs.
Okay.
And the students just have mock-ups of the satellites and sensors that could possibly be incorporated into future launches.
If I can interrupt, Dr. Rowland kind of touched upon a point which I think is the shift that fundamentally has to happen in Maine. I grew up in Maine. I was an example of one of those people who got a technical degree, left Maine, came back to Maine, tried to get a job, got another degree, technical degree, left Maine again because I needed a job. But I think the shift that has to happen in Maine is to believe that we can do this, that we just have associated ourselves with certain agricultural industries mostly, and we've seen a shift of maybe we can do advanced machining. Oh, maybe we can do composites work. And I think now we're seeing the shift of like, hey, we can do aerospace work here in Maine. There's no reason we can't. We have the right people. We have the capability. It's just a lot of them leave the state and maybe never come back. In fact, two people on our team are folks that originally grew up in Maine, went away, and are coming back. So I think what we're seeing is a shift in from the university standpoint of people saying, hey, from all the way from educational standpoint, and this is what Terry's organization is encouraging, we can do space here at Maine, we can develop the technology, and we don't have to leave Maine to grow into careers within aerospace.
Are there any, Terry, and maybe this is part of the feasibility study, I mean, are there any resources the state lacks that it would need in order to grow a more robust space satellite industry?
There probably are. I'm not going to fool myself to say there isn't. There's obviously financial resources, but I think in terms of the assets that we have, we really have an impressive array of businesses that have been in the aerospace as suppliers that are very much relevant to the launch complex and to launch itself as both as suppliers, vendors, telecommunications, whatever you might call it. We have the students, we have the University of Maine, we have St. Joseph's. I mean, we have people that are really interested in something like this. It's now just taking the opportunity to figure out, okay, what can we use in order to make it happen? What are the additional assets? And I can tell you a big hurdle is going to be the financial asset. It does cost to build this, so it needs to be both private and public partnership. And, you know, we can talk about that. But that's what the feasibility study is going to try and do. And what we're trying to accomplish is to make sure that whatever investment that's going to be needed from both the private and public sector is as low as possible, because we're trying to learn from the mistakes of the other 10 launch sites across the country. Some of them are not doing too well for a variety of reasons. We don't know why. And then take those lessons learned and figure out what is more unique in the state and come up with a real good financial plan to make it successful.
Well, I was reading one of the things that the state is kind of looking at is the idea that rather than simply create a spaceport available for launches, since launches come up every now and then on an irregular schedule, developing more of an educational aspect that would draw in people on a regular basis.
Yeah, not only educational, but also research and development and commercialization.
Sort of a space incubator.
And we have a lot of people that know how to do that in terms of providing services to these kinds of businesses. I mean, goodness, Ali, Dr. Abadi can talk to you about the number of companies of faculty members that created businesses from the University of Maine. I mean, they really know how to do it, and other people as well. I hate to use the word cool and innovative around this particular thing. It's really, for me, it's a common sense opportunity that really leverages all the assets that we have, bring more people from the outside of the state in order to see whether or not this really can work. The other thing real quickly, Erwin, that I'd like to mention is that at the same time that we're doing the feasibility study, we are also sponsoring with the university, with the Maine Math Science Alliance and other organizations, what we call a CubeSat Challenge that brings together high school with university and businesses to build a mission based on the CubeSat. And the winner of that CubeSat Challenge then would be part of a proposal that the University of Maine, under the leadership of Dr. Abadi, would send to NASA, and then NASA would launch. And we're going to repeat this every year. This will be done, hopefully, at the same time, if we're successful with a spaceport, that we can generate that interest and show people that, yeah, we can do it, not only for Maine, but we can be a very focal point for NASA launch and research and development and commercialization for across the country.
And NASA would actually offer us funding to launch payloads like these student ones.
Yeah, and they're already doing more and more of that in all of their various sectors. Dr. Dorland, anything else to add?
Well, no, but thank you for this wonderful session here on satellite science.
Okay, you're very welcome. That was Dr. Ryan Dorland, Assistant Professor of Physics and Chemistry at St. Joseph's College. And again, thank you for joining us today. Dr. Abadi, you were mentioning before some of the work that's already been done in terms of creating sensors that were sent to the International Space Station to detect possible air leakage and that now those sensors have come back. Talk a little bit more about how that experiment has been going and at this point what you're evaluating with the equipment that you have back.
So University of Maine was one of the five nationally funded payload projects that was selected back in 2013-2014 timeframe. So the main problem we were trying to solve on board the space station is that when you have a very tiny hole, maybe because of the aging of the structure around, you know, nuts and bolts, or maybe around the hatch, or maybe it's just because of the micrometeoroid impact or space debris impact, you may not realize that the air pressure is going down gradually, and by the time you realize, it would be too late to try to locate it. So we're trying to develop a autonomous system that basically actively listens for these ultrasonic waves that are emitted because of a tiny hole on the structure and try to localize it without the need for the astronauts to go out and basically examine the structure using a handheld device. The whole project was, of course, very challenging. I mean, designing and building, but the main challenging part of that, which I think it was a very good education experience for the students, was to work with different NASA groups for certifying the payload to actually go to space and be a safe payload and also operational payload. So going through that process I think, very valuable training for the students, give them skills beyond what they learn in regular engineering classes. So it was something experiential, something that they need to interact with NASA centers. And some of the students who work on that payload are now working in companies like SpaceX or Elon Musk, or working at different NASA centers trying to help move the technology forward. So in terms of the device itself, it was up in International Space Station. It was launched in December of 2016. It was there for almost 6 months, and in summer of 2017 came down. It was a successful experiment, so the device actually survived the launch. It worked up there. We collected data, and right now we are looking into studying the effect of microgravity on the device, so how we should modify the algorithms based on the lessons learned for a more operational device that should go up to space. But one other interesting point I would like to make is that these kind of technologies that are developed for space can help us here on Earth. So we are also working on the leak detection device to be adopted and modified for our homes in Maine, to be able to detect if there is any gas leak or propane leak using a similar technology. Of course, a little bit more R&D needs to be done, but this is where we kind of relate a space to Maine.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. Jennifer Rooks will be back. She'll be hosting a conversation with the Maine-based author of a fascinating new book about the role of silence in our lives. Now, you can email your comments and questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You can also call us here at 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Finance Authority of Maine, providing financial solutions that help Maine people achieve their business and higher educational goals. FameMaine.com.
If you had to work for more than a month without pay, would you still be able to make ends meet?
My little boy's birthday is Friday. Me and my wife talked about last night, like, what are we going to buy him? You know what I mean?
I'm Ari Shapiro, reporting from Louisiana on the government shutdown's impact on one small town, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is this afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up today at 2, the Commonwealth Club of California. General Stanley McChrystal speaks about the value of leaders. Retired Army General Stanley McChrystal provides a thoughtful analysis of what goes into the making of a successful leader. In an era when strong leadership qualities are sought everywhere, from business to government and beyond.
Welcome back to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz. Nice to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. We're talking about space, and we're talking about the possibilities that may be out there for satellite launches from Maine. Sasha, I wanted to talk to you. You had mentioned earlier that because the rockets we'd be talking about are generally smaller and that the environmental effects would be much less.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what environmental effects, though, would still exist. I mean, we're still talking about burning a fuel and propellant on the way to orbit. We're still talking about noise, those sort of things.
Yeah, I guess this is an opportunity for me to speak up about our particular fuel. Well, I can't get into the secret sauce. I can say it's bio-derived and it's no worse than burning a candle. But for our particular rocket, it's particularly non-noxious. You could even, technically, you would eat the fuel and nothing particularly bad would happen to you. I wouldn't recommend it, but you could still do it. There are issues with other environmental issues, the sound. When you get to really large rockets, the sound is actually a problem for wildlife. I'm confident with the size of our rockets, that won't be an issue. We need about a mile and a half radius where we're not between us and other buildings, just to not disturb the neighbors, and the loudness, according to FAA, is acceptable. But it's probably akin to a really loud jet engine when it comes to the loudness of our rockets.
Now, the other impact, too, is we've heard, of course, over time, as more and more stuff has been orbited, especially in low Earth orbit, that space is now beginning to fill.
A lot of junk.
In some cases with a lot of junk, yeah. In a lot of cases with, just a lot of satellites. So talk a little bit about that, how in the era of increasing numbers of CubeSats, we keep that space in low Earth orbit usable and safe.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's what's really neat about these small CubeSats is so many of them are going into low Earth orbit. And because they're small, inherently small, and they usually are going to low Earth orbit, they cannot maintain their orbit for more than a couple of years, maximum maybe 5 years. So they inherently come back to Earth, they burn up in the atmosphere, and they evaporate. Which is a wonderful thing for our business, because that means that we will always have continuing number of customers that want to relaunch their inexpensive satellites back up into space.
Yeah, and it means that not too much stuff will accumulate up there.
Right, it'll inherently come on down. Yeah.
Yeah. Are these large enough to be tracked, though, because they still are going to be in low Earth orbit for a period of time?
Yeah, actually, you might have heard in the news a couple of months ago, there was a company that got in trouble for launching through an Indian aerospace company satellites that were too small, according to the Air Force, I think, to be tracked. But the minimum standard size, what's called the 1U CubeSat, the 10 by 10 by 10 centimeter CubeSat, is trackable by the military, and they do keep a database of everything that's in space, and that minimum size is perfectly fine for space. Most of them are actually about 3 to 6 times the size. That's sort of the sweet spot, which we'll also be able to launch. Yeah. And those are easily trackable as well.
Okay. So, Terry, we were talking about this just before we came on the air. The proposal that's being kind of tossed around for the feasibility study envisions perhaps using a site in Washington County or perhaps using the old Loring Air Force Base, which is in far northern Maine and would have perhaps good facilities for a launch area. But it also describes perhaps putting a control site down at Brunswick Landing in the southern part of the state. Why the difference?
Why the difference? That's a good question. We looked at the original concept was to have the launch and the mission control in the same location. And one of the criteria that we were looking for initially was to minimize the cost and to utilize existing facilities and assets that currently exist in Maine. And I knew that, so we looked at Brunswick because of the Brunswick Air Naval Station, Naval Air Force Base. What Steve Levesque over there at the Midcoast Regional Redevelopment Authority has been able to do is just tremendous. And he's a, in fact, Sasha's a tenant of Brunswick Landing and Tech Place and all that. And he has a lot of facilities that could be renovated for mission control. Not only for mission control, but for the research and development, for the exploratorium, for K through 12, for tourism and all that. So he was really gung-ho. And I think then we decided, okay, if we do it in Brunswick, it makes sense. It would lower the cost. Putting a launch site in Brunswick is not going to make it publicly. It's not going to work. We probably won't be able to get even approval from the federal, from the FAA. So we thought, okay, there's a potential for Washington County and Aroostook County. Certainly Aroostook County also because of limestone reduces the cost, but we're not precluding sites other than limestone, other sites in Aroostook and Washington County, for example, which I think would be an economic boon for the community. But fundamentally, when you're talking about launch site, the most critical part is community acceptance. And I think that is something that's going to be, if we get to that point, because we need to figure out if it's feasible, community acceptance is really going to be very important. Community participation in all facets of the discussion and the planning is essential. Otherwise, this would not survive first day of consideration.
What seems to come down to a couple of factors from my perspective is one, good paying jobs, technical jobs, which you can see from the launch support, which you can see from advanced machining, CNC, milling, the computer programming of all the support logistics, development of new CubeSat technologies. But also, I think because we're talking about a whole different class of rockets, not these ginormous ones, it also, from a impact standpoint, makes it much more acceptable than the SpaceX's of the world, which would be just overwhelming, I think, for what most of us would accept.
Yeah. This is probably very hard to envision, but go ahead and dream with us a little bit. If this goes forward, if the feasibility study looked good, et cetera, when do you think, Terry, you know, you might actually create a launch site and launch rockets from this state?
I think within less than 5 years. I think so, given the assets that we have. But we'll do it in phases. It'll probably be the data research center that gets developed and then the launch site. Hopefully within 3 years, Sasha and, you know, Blue Shift and Vault Enterprise and maybe others, they'll be ready in their business development to actually launch satellites. So I think within 5, max 10 year period, a fully developed mission complex that includes a launch and mission control and research and development, commercialization, all that, probably will take a good 10 years. But we'll see significant impact within 5 years and maybe even depending on how it's phased in.
Dr. Abadi, I'm just kind of curious on that kind of time scale. What do you envision doing up at UMaine in that kind of time?
We are working on several new projects with NASA Marshall Space Flight Center down in Alabama to be prepared for this kind of, you know, initiative to come to fruition. And one of them is trying to develop new technologies for building miniaturized wireless communication system, be able to offer electronics which are lower in terms of cost, weight, easier to program, and also be able to remotely charge sensors. So these are some of the new programs we are working on. And no matter when this initiative comes to fruition and the students can work on it. These skills are something that we really need for the future of a STEM workforce. So the students who are getting trained on these areas are hopefully going to fill the gap for a STEM workforce. And hopefully once this initiative comes to reality, we will be prepared by then.
Good.
All right. We've got a few minutes. If you'd like to pose a question or join our conversation, the phone number here, 800-399-3566. Again, that's 800-399-3566. We don't want to conclude our conversation today without talking about the latest Chinese accomplishment in space. And I have to admit, I was in part responsible for suggesting the music.
Choice of music.
but we will here know this as their first landing on the far side of the moon, which is...
And there is no dark side.
No.
There's no dark side.
You know, it's funny, actually, as we talk about that no dark side, one of the things that they put on that little spacecraft, of course, were some plants to sprout. I believe they were cotton plants. And they actually did get them to sprout. But then the lunar night fell, temperatures fell like several hundred degrees, and they made no provisions for heating their plants. So they've
so worse than the winter in Maine.
Yeah, yeah. A lot worse. The near side of the moon, the part that we see, it has these darker areas, which we know now by the term mare, or what is really the misnomer seas. They're really ancient lava flows. But we've known for decades, actually, that the far side of the moon is much more heavily cratered. Do we have any idea why that is, why that difference exists?
I have no idea.
We had a TARDIS, a time machine. We could go back and see.
Yeah, yeah.
I can comment on that. Yeah. I think
go ahead, Dr.
side of the moon is kind of... far from Earth, right? So the side that is facing outward to the space is more prone to receiving, you know, impacts from, you know, different kind of space meteorite and things like that. But one other comment I would like to add is this milestone for the Chinese space program is very important because in the past, U.S. and Russia used to kind of lead the space program, and China always kind of continued on the footstep. But being the first to do something is very important, has a lot of effect in the program. So the being able to land on the other side as the first, you know, is the first time that China kind of shows some leadership in that program. So I think that's also adds to the significance of what they did.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about it, I think, for a lot of folks is why are they first? For all of the years that the United States, Russia, other places have sent spacecraft to orbit the moon or even land on the moon, whether manned or unmanned, this is the first time any country has attempted to land on the far side. Why was that?
I can answer that if I have time. Basically, the Congress usually decides where we're going to go. At some point, we were supposed to go to the moon, and then we change our goal. So right now, NASA is working on the Space Launch System, SLS system, which is capable of going to deep space. So that's where has been the priorities for NASA. And in terms of the lower Earth orbit and basically around the Earth orbit, we kind of focused onto the private sector. So it really depends on where we put our strategic kind of focus, and that's the reason we didn't think about the moon. But as Jim Kennedy said, the former director of Kennedy Space Center, moon is halfway to anywhere. So if we want to go anywhere in the world, we need to first escape Earth's gravity. So going to moon is going to be important next step.
Energetically, yeah.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I think this is part of the problem is that once we completed the shuttle program, the interest in space exploration diminished. There's been a lack of leadership at the federal level, not necessarily in Congress, but it starts with the president historically because they propose a budget. And as a result of that, the public education, public knowledge of what NASA does and the importance of space exploration has diminished with every generation. When you can think about all the technologies that we use right now, the microchips, the computers, the golf dimples that people use to golf, those were part of the innovation that occurred as a result of space exploration that were brought back to the world and commercialized and make as a common household products. Whatever you look around your house and you'll see something's been impacted as a result of space exploration. The second part is that people think that it's expensive. NASA is expensive. When you consider the national budget, it's less than 1% of the budget. So there's been a lack of leadership. And I think what we're trying to do collectively with Sasha and Ali and us and everybody else is to see whether or not we have the leadership here in Maine that we can replicate to some extent at the scale of Maine what John Kennedy did in the early 60s by getting the nation together, understanding that they're going to invest in research and development, higher education, K-12. That was really important because what we do here in Maine is not going to only impact R&D and commercialization, but think about what can be done to STEM education at the K-12. I think it will really energize a lot of people. There'll be investment that will be needed, policies that will need to be changed. So it's really kind of a motivation, a move forward to change how we treat our students here in the state, recruiting people from the outside, potentially a solution that could help all industries in the state.
And how we can invest in the aerospace industry here. I think the Chinese example of the landing on the other side of the moon is a great example of something we didn't expect they'd be able to do. And I think that's a shift in expectations. It's a really good parallel with what I was saying earlier on is this is about shifting the expectation of what we in Maine can do and what we're capable of doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it'll be interesting to see, too, and this will be the subject of a future program, but a little later this year, we are finally going to see both SpaceX and Boeing launch astronauts to the International Space Station. They'll be the first American astronauts launched from U.S. soil since the shuttles were retired in 2011. That also represents a shift in the space dynamic, at least here in the United States. John F. Kennedy did kind of marshal the commercial resources for the Apollo program, but now what we really do see is we see sometimes private companies actually kind of taking the lead in this.
Right.
So, interesting. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Anybody?
I would like to invite the general public to come on April 10 to Cross Insurance Center in Bangor to see how much interesting work has been done by the students in many different disciplines that will relate to space. Some of these work have been funded by Maine Space Grant Consortium, some funded by Maine Economic Improvement Fund and University of Maine. So if you want to mark your calendar, April 10, Cross Insurance Center in Bangor will be a wide array of research work done by the undergraduate students that relate to space and so many other disciplines.
All right. Great. Thank you all for joining us today. That was Dr. Ali Abadi, Assistant Vice President for Research and Director of the University of Maine Center for Undergraduate Research, where he's a professor of electrical and computer engineering. Here with me in Portland, Sasha Derry, Chief Executive Officer of Blue Shift Aerospace, and Terry Shahada, the Executive Director of the Maine Space Grant Consortium. Lucy Sisick ran our board today. We also had help from our Bangor studios from Rich Tozier and George Thomas. A reminder, you can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources by visiting mainecalling.org. Also, don't forget the picture of the rocket fuel, which you'll find on our Facebook page. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Erwin Gratz, and you've been listening to Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.